All right. Hello, and welcome to From Brown to Great, a business, aviation, and personal growth podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Ruiz Jimenez, and today I'm here with Buzzcraft. How are you doing today?
Doing really well, Daniel. Thanks for having me here today.
Yeah, I'm super excited for you to come on today. I haven't had a lot of aviation guests in a while since coming back to California. There's way more aviation people in Florida just because it's like the number one place for flight training.
Yeah, of course. I mean, especially in your kind of corner in the aviation world, it's like that's where commerce happens and that's where the beautiful weather is. And therefore, everything about getting on a plane, whether you're a person or a package, happens right where you were.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny because it's like, it's really nice weather, but also the hurricanes that come in and all. It's pretty hectic, too. Like, there's going to be some hectic parts to fly.
It's take, man, you know? So, like, if it's beautiful weather most of the time, you're going to have to deal with extreme weather challenges the other time. So, not a surprise at all.
Yeah. I remember I started my flight training here in California, in Davis, California. And I actually finished my check ride and did my check ride in Florida. And I feel like the level of like margin in aviation was just way more stricter than it was in California when I moved. And this is what I mean. So there's, of course, we were saying that it's like the number one place for flight training. What is that going to mean? The more flight training, the more airplanes that there are, there's going to be more airspaces that you can possibly bust. And so having to maneuver a lot of Bravo airspaces was like a very fine line. And here in California, it was like pretty open space. I didn't have to worry too much about, you know, busting any airspace. I could just fly, talk to approach, and just have a good time, you know? And then once I moved there, I was like, I need to get four flight. I can't do charts. I can't do paper and charts anymore.
You have lived the perfect example of somebody who wants to be like the homegrown start to finish civilian pilot, because you got to experience both of those worlds, you know, man. You got to be like, okay, I got open space. I can work more on the grassroots, seat of the pants, flight maneuvering, you know, that sort of thing. But if you want to be in aviation beyond just being a recreational or private pilot, you need to understand airspace. You need to understand how to work with the flow. Work yourself into every other scale of aviation, to include business aviation, commercial aviation, you know, big commercial aviation. So that's where it's at. And I'm really glad you got to experience both coasts, which is pretty phenomenal. Most people who are doing this from, you know, ground zero moving up don't ever get to do it early in their journeys on both coasts like you're doing.
So mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah, and I definitely feel like I would have missed out. And I'm sure it's way different in like very mountainous terrain, you know, because I mean, we have...
Oh yeah, you got the middle.
Yeah, so, yeah.
You know, you got West Coast, East Coast, yep. You got pretty sea level, flat, mostly.
Yep.
Right, but then there's a middle part.
Mm-hmm. So. And then that's when you're going to have to focus more on like, okay, can we actually climb to our altitude today?
Right.
Yeah. Can we pass the mountains?
You got to get that flight engineer kind of mode, right?
Yeah.
Or meteorologist meets pilot mode, yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah, I saw this post online where it was like, I wanted to be a pilot, but I never knew I had to be a lawyer and a meteorologist and all this. And it's like, it encompasses so many aspects. Oh, and also just like personal assessment and just making sure that you're okay when you're flying. And it's so much that encompasses aviation. And I really want to ask you how you got started, but I want to let our listeners know how we met. So I was, it's a good story. I was practicing for my written exam for my private pilot, and I was taking classes my senior year at Sac City, and I was in the library, and I had all my books out for aviation, studying, and Mr. Kraft, he's substitutes sometimes at Davis High and other schools here in Davis, And he comes over and he's like, he looks at all the books that I have and he's like, that looks familiar. Nothing said after that. Yeah. he's like, I'll come back.
Keep it mysterious.
Yeah, exactly. It was mysterious. Job to do, man. Yeah, that is true. You had a class. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
See if people were actually doing work. Yeah. Not while, supposed to do work.
Yeah. But yeah, it was funny. And then you walk around and you throw your ATP license on the on the table. And I'm like, whoa, oh my God, he's a pilot. Yeah. I liked it. Yeah.
You know, when you deal with other aviators, you can kind of get away with that certain kind of like forward cocky statement, I think. But, I honestly think that the pilot persona that the non-flying public has isn't always totally positive. You know, they always think about the big head, the big ego stuff. So I really try to stay conscious of that and try to kind of mitigate it. That's like, well, if you see somebody else that's super into fly, just push the throttles forward, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pun intended.
Yeah.
So, it was really great to see, find example of a young person who's looking at aviation, and it's such an important part of our future as a whole, as our economy, as our society. And we were just kind of chatting about this before our session here. Aviation as an integral part of us as human beings is not going away. You know, we kind of fantasize about how, well, we'll just we'll take spacecraft everywhere, or we'll just do everything where we are sitting as humans and just go full AI remote, and then we don't need airplanes for anything. It's like, well, that's not reality. Humans are always going to want to travel. They're always going to want to get their own human body from point B. And beyond that, they're going to want to get 10, 100 times beyond their human body of goods that they need via air, because they need them right away. We need it more right away than ever now. So aviation is absolutely not just a here to stay, but it's growing so rapidly that we can't keep up. It's about pilot shortages. Can't keep up on production of aircraft. And sure, there's going to be a lot of pilotless remote aviation platforms out there, but it's all about understanding how to negotiate the air and get from point A to point B and do it safely. That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
So it's a great opportunity still. Maybe 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago when I was first getting into it, I was like, well, I want to take advantage of this now because I don't know how long it's going to last. I really had that kind of maybe science fiction take on it. Like, I don't know, maybe pilots will be gone by the time I'm an older adult. And then turns out the opposite is true. You know, it's like we need more pilots than ever, and therefore we need more maintainers and aircraft designers. And so it's a perfect time to be alive if you're into aviation or the business of aviation.
Yeah. Well, there's so many things that I want to touch on just from you saying all that. That's why I'm so excited for you to be here today, because I'm like, oh, it's been so long, so I can talk aviation with someone. It's definitely been a while. So we were definitely talking about how just aviation is rapidly growing. And I had someone on the podcast before. He was a flight instructor. His name is Mike Thompson. And he was saying, if you're not learning, you're not flying. Like, you have to catch up, and there's constantly, because there's, like what you're saying, we're in a career where it's just constantly growing, and with growth, there just has to be constant learning and constant catching up, and if you're not catching up, you're behind, which I think is so cool, because, I mean, that just doesn't apply to aviation, it just applies to, I'm sure it applies to many other fields as well. And in life, especially, you have to be constantly being a student and be in a humbling position where you know that maybe now you feel like you know something, but that doesn't mean that you won't be able to hang later on, because it's just rapidly changing. I was at Oshkosh, and I was able to talk. Oh, in Oshkosh, for people that don't know, it's like the biggest small general aviation event in the world. So many people come and fly in their small airplanes and land there, and it's like in the middle of nowhere.
In Wisconsin,
which is the middle of nowhere too.
Cheese and airplanes, that's like the thing.
Yes, you know, cheese curds was huge. Yeah, cheese curds were huge there. Man, that was like my diet there, pretty much.
It's pretty close to Canada. Maybe that's why cheese curds are big up there.
Yeah, it was huge. But I talked to these guys from NASA, and they were talking about how they had a separate department where they're figuring out, and they're working with the FAA too on, we're having cars that are able to fly now, and the airspace is going to look insane because of that. And so they're trying right now to figure out how can we accommodate airspace for people that are going to start flying in cars that can drop, you know, that can fly now. And we should say we're at Sudwerk right now.
quick plug.
Thank you. Shout out to Sudwerk Brewing Company here in Davis. Mr. Kraft, he does a lot of gigs here. He's also a musician, and he'll come here and do events. And so he was able to help get a little location for us to record today.
We're in a quiet back corner of the non-public area, but the staff, especially the brewers and brewing support staff, walk through here. And it's kind of, you know, past the normal business day, but, you know, they're like, wow, cool. There's a couple guys with headphones on back there.
Yeah.
What are they doing? They must have some kind of, like, group gaming thing going
on. Yeah. That's funny. Like, oh, what's going on here? It's just so insane to see, like, that. That's exactly another example of having to constantly reteach yourself and constantly learn and be a student in aviation of how are all these new rules going to affect your life in flying.
For sure. You brought up something in my mind that I want to mention is very early on in my aviation career, and my interest in aviation started as a civilian, and I had a few general aviation flights, not where I was in any kind of formal training. And then I kind of took the military route, and I went to the Air Force Academy, and I got to fly gliders while I was a cadet there, and I was totally hooked. I got a certified flight instructor. I'm about, how long ago, with nomenclature and
yeah, as opposed to CFI.
And I was like 19 years old, and I'm like, wow, this is really cool. And things that there's this military battle and civilian interface that I was aware will be good for like my entire life. I remember that point. And then graduated, went on to pilot training, flew a bunch of different kind of aircraft. I've flown military aircraft, everything from fighters to transports to trainers, and it's been just, that was a really rewarding part of career. Went on to, it sounds like I'm getting into my resume.
No, that's good. Yeah, you should definitely talk about, you know, how you got into aviation, where the passion like from it grew, and the experience that you've had.
I eventually from about, well, including the academy years, that was like four, so from all 25 years of flying in military aircraft, and literally like, I don't know, 10 or 15 different kinds of aircraft. I went out and I retired from the Air Force at the absolute worst time in aviation history, or one of the worst times, in like 2007. There's a big recession. The first possible place I could go to and grab was the cargo airline world, which turned out to be really great. And I didn't know much about it other than it's kind of like what I was doing in the Air Force for a lot of the different airframes I flew. But the cargo or freight airline world is all about, since apart from the military, the civilian side of things, commercial side, but freight mining is all about profit margin, you know, making that bottom dollar. So everything was based on flying all night, lots of nights, never being home. And frankly, I was home a lot more while I was an Air Force pilot, which is pretty remarkable.
No kidding.
And yeah. So I hung in there with it for several years. I was a 747 captain for a cargo airline that kind of went bankrupt just as I was thinking about leaving. So that
was kind of... What was the name of it?
Well, that's not important.
That's not important. Yeah.
Well, suffice Details. To say, they did get bought out, and their company that acquired them is surviving and doing quite well.
Yeah.
But you know, it was really it was a great experience. I don't regret any minute or flight hour of it. I'm just noticed that there were huge differences. And the same type and reason of flying in the military versus civilian world. The one biggest difference was, you know, hey, we're doing this to get the max profit we can versus we're doing this to, you know, be in defense of the U.S. And I much preferred the latter, the defense thing. And I, although the pay was theoretically better on the civilian side. And I do think that with, most companies that can stand the test of not going bankrupt and getting bought out are definitely well positioned to allow the civilian pilot in the business world, the commercial world, to do quite well. That wasn't the same route that I took, but 90% of my friends who I flew with in the military, who decided to continue to fly, are still actively flying in commercial carriers. A lot of them legacy carriers, you know, Delta, United, American, certainly, you know, a lot of Southwest, France, and then a few, you know, like legacy freight liners, I would say, like FedEx, GPS, and they're all doing fine. And so at my age, they cracked the code, they figured out how to make that post-military flying career work. And now they're kind of faced with, well, you know, there's still this age 65 rule that the FAA has.
And they're pushing it now.
They are. Yeah. I hear it might go to 67, which is, I think, a great idea. Let's make it more science-based, medicine-based, still just arbitrary, number. But these guys and gals, they're doing a great job out there, and they're enjoying the chapter two of their career. And now they're kind of coming back and starting to talk to me about, hey, well, what's this general aviation stuff like? And how do I go back and get my CFI, you know, stuff? And I tell them, you know, everything that I did, because when I left, you know, Company X and went more to the non-flying business sector to kind of finish to be able to, you know, retire. I also, on the side, took advantage of my GI Bill for serving in the military in 4 years. And then I worked on checking off the right squares to get additional CFI ratings, which I did the glider CFI, you know, when I was a teenager. And then didn't really do anything with FAA. Oh, I had private single engine plane as well on the side and aero club out there at the academy. But I did nothing more with general aviation or civilian aviation until I retired from the Air Force. And then I went back and I'm like, hey, guys, like to see how it's like coming back. And I'll tell you what, it was brutal, man. It was brutal because you don't know how tough it is to work, you know, at the grassroots level until you have to go there, back there from the stratosphere, literally from the stratosphere. Military pilot, file IFR, instrument flight rules, just you're always flying above all the general aviation recreation contract and can.
Amen.
And suddenly you have to actually not just know those, but you have to depend on understanding them so you don't get like squashed.
Right? Yes.
So really an amazing journey much later in aviation life, but one that I just keenly respect everybody that's out there working it from day one, ground level as a civilian, and without that whole Uncle Sam, you know, subsidy, right? There's nothing like getting paid to fly, but when you have to pay so that you can fly, that's a huge 180 that, unless you're super committed, you're probably not going to take on. But it's so worth it. You know, I did a lot of, as well as getting a little bit of VA help, I did a lot of shell and counting, and to really see this general aviation, civilian aviation side, you know, more thoroughly. But I'm absolutely got a lot more to learn. It's a different world. It's a much more hardworking world in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that I highly recommend to anybody. You can absolutely do it nowadays, whereas when I was growing up, you know, there are plenty of opportunities to fly for the airlines, but you really pretty much had to go through the military
to get the hours.
They preferred
military, right?
Yeah. So nowadays it's like, oh man, it's like just all hands on deck. If you are a pilot in anything, or you're a student pilot in anything, or you want to be a pilot, you know, it's like the commercial aviation world, the corporate and larger commercial aviation world wants you. So I think it's a great time to be exploring those opportunities. And you know, if you don't want to go to the military, you really don't have to at this point, you know. It's still a great way to go, in my opinion, but you don't have to. So that's a large nutshell of what I've been up to.
Yeah. Well, I like how you talk a little bit about the transition from going military to going to business. And I know that when you go to business, it is exactly profit. And like, imagine this, like, it gets even worse when you're on the maintenance side of things, because it's like the longer the airplane sits on the ground, the more money that we're losing. Absolutely. So we're getting, as a mechanic point of view, you're getting less time, you're getting stress on a very important job that you have to do to keep the plane airworthy. And a lot of people that might be in a manager position have no aviation maintenance background whatsoever. You know, they come in fresh out of school, you know, or you know, from a different business background, but they don't understand the meat and potatoes of what's going on. And so I definitely understand and feel you on that, because I've had other people and heard it and experienced it a little bit as well. Not to a degree of like, oh my gosh, but I've definitely heard it from a lot of friends where it's like, this is intense, you know, and it is about getting stuff done on time, and it's like, well, you have this much amount of time to get it done, so maybe quality might go down in some aspects, right?
You know, I love what you just said, like, playing on the ground equals zero income.
Yes, right? You're losing money. Yeah,
for anybody. Yeah. Right, losing money because you're still shelling out money for that plane. Mm-hmm. For that insurance, for that upkeep, and if current events are anything to play, and they certainly are, I mean, look at look at Boeing, look at the big guys, you know,
and they're suffering now for it.
We have a problem. It was literally just late this afternoon I saw that now it's not just the MAX 9 with the door plug bolt issue.
Mm-hmm.
That Boeing and their subsidiary fuselage supplier are under the Microsoft report, but now it's like, hey, guess what, since we're all descending on these Boeing airplanes at their individual carriers, and we're looking from a maintenance angle at like deep inspections of all these systems, it turns out just this afternoon, and I hope I get this overview right.
Mm-hmm.
There are MAX 8 and MAX 9 bolt issues in the rudder assembly, internal to the rudder, and there's like at least one instance of I forget how they put it. It was humorous if it wasn't, you know, that, and thank goodness it didn't lead to any accidents.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a non-fixed bolt in the rudder compartment of a 737 MAX. I don't remember which model, but certainly there's all kinds of inspections, and I think this is probably the tip of the iceberg, and I'm sure we're going to see more about the scrutiny. And it, you know, pilots have obviously a lot to do with getting the plane safely from A to B, but really, in large part, pilots, while they are absolutely called upon to come to the rescue if something's not going right, in particular with a flight, the systems themselves need to perform the way they're intended to, and if they go catastrophically wrong, that's one of the big reasons the pilots are there. However, if things are not mechanically going right as they were designed to go right, then they're unfortunately sometimes where even the pilots cannot rescue the situation, right? So, and I believe this is indicative of that potential scenario where it's like, well, you know, you're supposed to have the plane constructed properly and maintained so that it retains that construction. And so that's why it's super critical, beyond just a pilot shortage, it's super critical that we have maintenance personnel that are going to be able to carry the load of that. That's the first point of defense for keeping the flying public safe.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah. Well, I mean, it's all about, like, the word that I see in my head right now, like, it's preventative maintenance, right? Like, that's a really big word that right now is, like, flashing in red in my mind. And as a mechanic, that is exactly what you do. You're preventing certain situations that could go down because, exactly, a pilot is supposed to be able to work an issue once you're in the air, but you know, supposing that the majority of the airplane is okay,
exactly. It's like
there's only so much you can do, right?
Sure. Yeah. So, as a pilot, I would say, look, we have procedures. We have the Navy calls them DATOMs. The Air Force calls them Dash 1 procedures. The civilian world just calls it operate procedures, and then you refer to several different documents about systems that, if they are available or working correctly, and call it a minimum equipment list. If the MAL says you can fly with this, you can fly with this. Well, that means we're dependent on that thing to be working.
Yeah.
And it's only going to work correctly if it's been maintained correctly and it's been checked correctly and inspected correctly. So, first officer on a carrier that flies either of those 737 molecules you mentioned, that's that person's job to do a walk around. You know, they're checking the rudder, but what they're checking is, you know, a very basic visual external. Is it free and clear of foreign objects? Is it bent, or, you know, is there something funky going on with it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you would never know that there's a bolt loose inside the thing by doing a walk around. And that's all that is accomplished between flights on any given day, and I don't know how often maintainers are looking inside, you know, pulling out a little panel and scoping or whatever the interior of a flight control, and I would assume it's not very often because that's not cost effective, but it all starts with that that original proper application of wattage, bolts, nuts, et cetera, to you know, a certain specification, right?
Yeah.
And that's entirely the realm of the maintainers. So we're obviously all concerned that things perhaps have been overlooked, and I would certainly hope that nobody wants to just kind of blow off their responsibility. I don't think that's the case at all.
Yeah.
What has happened is it's where there's a handoff, you know?
Yeah.
With the door plug thing, it was because the subsidiary, you know, delivered the fuselage to Boeing. Boeing had a lot of stuff they were doing. Whether or not there was any kind of actual written procedure for them to follow for that handoff or inspection, I don't know. But but certainly there's more to follow than that, but it absolutely comes full circle to, look, if you're going to be in aviation maintenance, you need to really have the mind, and I tell you this as a pilot, okay? You need to have the mindset that you are the final authority on whether that plane is going to properly serve the needs of these people, or if it's going to lead to some kind of incident or worse with those people that get on board that aircraft. So what I do appreciate is every maintainer I've ever met takes that to heart. And it's a very serious business. And like I said, everyone I've ever talked with takes that very seriously. And we just need to shore up things that happen in transit, things that happen with when more than one company is involved, I think, especially. But by all means, if anybody's thinking of getting into aviation, please make sure that you're getting into it because you want further the industry. And even more importantly than that, you want to make sure that you are protecting people's lives, right? And property. So.
Yeah. Protect was a word that came up in my head as you were speaking. And as you're speaking as well, I see aviation as, and this is something that I wanted to talk and actually say to you personally too. So I'm happy I'm kind of getting towards that. When I was in Boy Scouts and you were still in the time where I was in Boy Scouts, I had a lot of people that I looked up to and I would consider them mentors, including you, whether you knew that or not, you know. but I would look at people and say, like, they have a way of thinking that I want, and I need to be like a good functioning person in society and to be able to give back. There's tools in your mind that are at any disposal to you when you need, and aviation has really helped me be able to hone those. And a good example is as you're speaking the story of how the problem with the you know the screw going on or the bolt in the MAX 9, I automatically in my head I'm like, okay, well, in aviation there's more than one reason as to something goes wrong. Whenever something goes wrong, and they teach you this in school, it's because it's more than two things, or it could be, you know, two or more things that happen that compile up, and then a mistake happens. It's never just for one reason, and then it happens.
Exactly, and that's a key aviation safety kind of mantra.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a chain of events.
Yeah, and you learn that as a pilot too. Yeah,
right. And so
yeah.
The chain of events from pilot related activities and actually flying are either going to lead to or mitigate an accident. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you think in the maintenance world is mm-hmm. I think what you're telling me, which makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically, like going into it is exactly that. I wanted to find these tiny little like nuggets of like life advice that I felt like I needed as someone to be able to grow and like in Boy Scouts, because that's another way how we know each other. He was on my board of review. Mr. Kraft was on my board of review for my Eagle. And it's about being able to be a good person yourself to give back to your society. But you have to be able to build yourself. And knowing these small things, like in aviation, I'll go to the pilot side. It's am I fit, you know? There's illness, medication, right?
I am safe,
that's exactly what I was going to, like, stress, you know, there's these tiny things that it's like, it doesn't just apply to aviation, it applies to, and I've noticed it's applied to everything that I do in my life, and okay, well, even in Boy Scouts too, it's like, be prepared, and then in aviation, it's the exact same thing, it's like, okay, well, you're gonna have lives at risk when every time you go up, you have to land no matter what. Okay, so how do you plan for that? Okay, well, let's look at the weight. Let's look at the weather, and weather is always constantly changing. And then what happens if X, Y, and Z don't work? You have an alternate plan. You have alternate airports. That's how someone in life, and those tools that you have are just so important and can reciprocate in all these other different aspects in life where maybe you feel lost, but it's like, okay, I have these bases where it's like, okay, I have a plan. What are my alternate airports, right? And it doesn't have to be, and airports in this sense is a metaphorical airport, right?
That's great.
Yeah.
It's life is all about Ashimondo analogies and figuring out what works for our situation we're currently in. And aviation to me and to you, what you just said, agreeing as well, is aviation lends itself to us grasping the physical realities of aviation and how important it is to do things right. Aviation, because our lives literally depend on it, and mm-hmm. the lives of others literally depend on it. It's a very powerful analogy to other things that we do in life, and where maybe it's not life and death, but it's like, well, it's just I can get through my day better. And that's fine, I think, to transfer that. I really like what you brought up about the humble wallet spirit, how to do the right thing whenever possible, to consider all the alternatives, to figure out how to make the right decision, and checking the weather. It doesn't always have to be checking the weather if we're doing something on the ground somewhere, but you know, you're checking out something, you're considering alternates, as mm-hmm. we say in the nation. It's super important to do those basic things that we as both maintainers and pilots will always do, which is, all right, what is the task before us? What needs to work correctly? What do we need to check out? What kind of info do we need to gather? Is that info we gathered matching up with what is necessary? Yes, then we do this. Oh, you do this other thing. When you're in the business of doing that as a maintainer or a pilot, you get very familiar and you embrace that style of doing things and transfers, I think, beautifully into anything else you do with your life. You know, it's like, okay, the risk level might be different, but you know, just, all right, there's a problem. Whatever other job I'm doing outside of admission. Okay, well, what's the problem? Okay, let me get all the facts, and then what should we do to create this thing that is, dude, fads, not correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then check back and see if we've succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in aviation, yeah. That part's a lot easier. It's like, oh, we landed safely. Okay. That's how you check back. Mm-hmm.
But also, exactly what you're saying, we have a review afterwards, how the flight went and what could have gone better.
Well, yeah. Right. Certainly. Yeah. And actually, the civilian world, that's very true. Just like the military, I was in the. And I'm sure the maintenance world as well, you're going to go back and look at everything on paper, because everything needs recorded with maintenance. You're going to review which one was done, you know, was done properly. Like where are all your tools, right?
Mm-hmm. When you're a maintainer, and it's like if they're shadow boxed, you know, they're shadowed.
Yeah. Going to be accounted for, and it is not, there's going to be a little problem.
Yeah, everyone, especially in the military, everything stops is what I heard. Yeah.
I wish I could afford to have a toolbox that has those cutouts for every
tool. Oh, they're nice. Yeah.
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 But you know, it's to me, it is really good that, and then I'll fly 24/7. Sometimes I wish I could. But certainly everything I do in life, if I let it and I think about it and think a little bit about aviation rules and what it means with that high-risk environment that aviation is, to doing things the right way, doing them in a certain order, and it just works for anything. So I'm really glad that you noticed that analogy. I don't know. I'm not currently in aviation as a living necessarily. I'm more, mm-hmm. more on the recreational hobby side, but I do maintain all my sea fighter and even some that. And I really, I think it's very important that we keep a professional cadre and find people that are as knowledgeable as possible in the maintenance side and the pilot operator side and pass them on. You know, I don't want to have a little, like a hiccup in the timeline, mm-hmm. which I was kind of afraid that COVID might have something to do with, right? Because I know I kind of stopped flying in COVID and general aviation, but certainly we we needed to make sure that even those who take our advice were absolutely on board with keeping it safe, being optimal, doing all those disciplines that you just described, that we can carry on to every other is by different times that's super important.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the reason why I started aviation, because I saw that in you, and I saw that in Mr. Lehman, and I saw that in Mr. Welsh, and I was like, how do they have what they have? You know, like how are they able to solve the problems or think the way that they do, right? And it's I can understand now, you know, briefly, because I'm young, right? I'm naive, but you know, in aviation, I'm able to understand more like little rules or different disciplines, like you were saying, and be able to translate that into all other aspects in your life as well. So that to me, it was really important to me. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, like I said, while you're young, I would also say adding on to while you're young, I'd say I am on my way. Cause I like that. That's a phrase in case that I am looking toward the future, and I am trying to absorb things from the past that others have learned, and trying to make sure that that I can build on that, you know what I mean? Because none of us in the past have got it right every time, and it's super important to remember all that so that you can keep getting it better. Tapered with aviation overall, maintenance operations has never been safer, even with these very news boutique-y, if you will, headlines. Aviation has never been safer in the history of flight than it is right now, this year, today. So, and it's because of us building on the knowledge of those that came before and the mistakes we made and the things we've learned. So that's the way we work it. That's the way we get to enjoy aviation and stay safe.
Yeah, well, I think that's why it makes the headlines, because, like, car crashes don't make headlines, right? But it happens all the time. Aviation, it almost never happens. So when there's something that goes on, yeah, it is news. But like I said, what you were saying, it's really cool that our industry really prioritizes safety, especially in a political point of view, where we do, as opposed to maybe look at a more political side of things, it is more like, let's get experts in, let's get pilots in, let's get mechanics in. We need their feedback in order to implement these new maybe regulations that we're gonna add. And I think in that industry, I talked to someone else that in the medical industry, it's a little bit different. You know, it is more like we were saying, like maybe like more like profit or something like that. And you know, while of course that does show it in some aspects and aviation as well, or politics, right? I think aviation is one of those aspects where it's like, it really, we're at the closest place where we can say we almost have it right, you know, or we're trying to do the right thing.
Oh yeah, I think it's, yeah. Well, it's definitely one of those professions, you know, like medicine. It's one of those professions where, or any first responder kind of profession, it's one of those professions where you have to be properly skilled, properly trained, properly cognizant, and able to respond in an instant to maintain and save lives. I mean, that's really what it's about, right? It's and I think that's why it's one of the few endeavors in your human in your workforce where it's literally like that. And now you got medicine, you got first responders, you got time, so maintainers, anything deviation. There isn't much room for error before it rears its ugly head and somebody is at least getting hurt, if not worse, right? It doesn't have to be scary. Again, if we're learning from the past and we understand, we're confident, safer uptake all the time, but it does take that constant vigilance, that constant, oh yeah, do I really have to check this again? Yes. I mean, because that's sort of a dichotomy, right? It's like, well, you know, everything's so safe, it doesn't matter if I do my little thing right this moment. That's why it keeps getting safer, because it does
matter. Yeah, and you do implement it. You do it. Absolutely. You continue to do it.
from that, from whatever that tolerance is on a bolt, certain rivet, you know.
To walking around the airplane too, yeah, and actually checking everything, yeah.
Absolutely, it's a nuts. It's fun while being extremely serious. That's possible.
Right? Yeah,
it's two things in one.
Well, I think that's like that's what I like about aviation. Well, it's like you're you know that there's an inherent risk, right? But once you get there, it's a hell of a time, you know.
It can be.
Yeah, and it's fun. And like exactly that model, what you're saying in aviation is one that I hope that many other industries are able to apply. And of course, we're not perfect, right? But it's just, I think we try to do the right thing for the majority of the times. Yeah. Because we have the underlying issue of safety. Yeah. That everything else encompasses job, that. Yeah, job. You learned that. Yeah. Yeah, you learned that. I have a question, just because I'm curious. I'm excited to hear your answer. You definitely have a big portion of your life now that you're mostly, retired or, you're taking the chill life. You want to give back to youth. And I see that in... like, coming and, doing a podcast with me or being very active in scouting while I was, in the program and I was around, and as well as being a substitute teacher in school. I want to ask, where does that come from and what do you hope to be able to, like, is there a reason why you want to leave something in younger audiences that they understand based on maybe your example, like for example, how that helped me, your example, or, is there a message or I'm just curious to
yeah,
see.
Yeah, sure. No, I think I understand what you're asking. And I haven't formulated it in layers like this, but I'll try. When I joined the military, it was because I wanted to fly airplanes, and that was very, I'll just frankly say that was kind of selfish, And I was like, I just want to be able to fly airplane as I want it to be. This is the best experience. I don't want to have to pay money for it. I just want to get the best training and et cetera. And so I kind of endured a lot of, military stressors in order to do that.
Military what?
Stressors, getting basic training, done, right? And beyond. And a lot of regiment, strict, discipline and effect, right? Day in, day out, 24/7. And maybe I wasn't totally into that, but I grew to understand that, that comes with the territory. And there are a lot of things about being disciplined and being regimented and being strict that apply to the thing that I really was passionate about, which was flying planes. Aviation is all about those things I just mentioned. And after time, I was like, okay, I'm comfortable with this lifestyle. I'll stay in the military, for a kind of a lot longer time than just a quick hop in and get out, the airlines, even when we might have a kind of take as much certain to. And so over time, I realized, there is so much with this military flying and flight in general and the importance of working with a team, that is working with crew, including the maintainer, that I was fascinated with, I was enamored with. And I ended up over time likening it to almost like being on a team, like a sports team. You know what I mean? And we all, most of us love to watch some kind of sport, the stretcher, we just had the Super Bowl last weekend.
Yeah.
And I was like, see, like everybody tuned into that. Interesting aerospace fact, Super Bowl had the highest viewership in decades, only outdone by the Apollo 11 moon landing.
Oh, no kidding.
1969.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I think that kind of speaks to, well, we like to see this team thing, this struggle, this overcoming obstacles, this, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
I was, like I said, I was enamored with that. I really appreciate it. I just like the physical nature of flying as well. I mean, still my own little selfish indulgence. But beyond all that, as I grew through flying, and then I retired from the Air Force, and I tried the civilian world on the big scale, and I was like, yeah, this is cool and all, and I really appreciated flying the 747. It was truly a wonderful large aircraft to fly, one of my favorites, definitely ever. I had to say, as I walked away from all that, you know, I just, in my kind of later half of my years, I wanted to kind of make sure that the stuff that I enjoyed on a input level, on me receiving, was something that I took and embraced to help me understand how to kind of do the output level. And that's where I am now. I think it's really important, for me anyway, to figure out how to, you know, give back is a pretty easy cutting phrase, and that's true. But more to the point, I want to make sure that, and I talk with my wife about this a good amount too, I want to make sure that we are, and she's a very recently retired elementary school teacher, mm, just down the freeway in another town. I think we both are on point with this with our friends. Like we have embraced the idea that to keep it cold, we want to train our replacements. We want to make sure that as human beings, we have other people that are kind of experiencing and feeling what it's like to be responsible, what it's like to be polite, what it's like to be a member of a team, what it's like to be respectful of one another. And that's, you know, you brought up the scouting thing too. And I think that's super important. It doesn't have to be that particular organization. It's just anywhere where you are a member of a group of people that are like into learning from one another, respecting one another, understanding that you'll have differences, learning from those differences, teaching new skills to one another.
The values too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Values, skills and values. I just think, and that's kind of like, that's been my undertone kind of motto lately. It's like, you know, substitute teaching, it's like, it's just kind of a little, you know, kind of job that like people don't really think about. Like, yeah, you know, it's not, there's no glamour in that. That's cool. I'm not into that. At this point in my life, maybe when I was initial Air Force pilot training graduate, I was into glamour, but I think the transition's been good and appropriate for the decades. It's so much more important to me on that I get to see the response, the reaction of kids where they're like, oh, you're telling me something to think about and I'm actually thinking about it. And it doesn't matter what it is necessarily, but there's lots of scenarios, you know, I get thrown out there, but that's not important. The thing is, the values, like you just mentioned, the value of team, the value of commitment, the value of hard work, that all these things that you mentioned that, you know, scouting happens to, and also everything that comes full circle to how we work hard to do what we want to as our own passion for, you could call it selfish reasons, whatever, for ourselves initially. Turns out those tools that we acquire are actually, they work great to also tool things for future generation, for our replacements. Mm-hmm. Let me say it. So, you know, yeah, I think acquiring the tools necessary to make ourselves better, but then as we age and move on and we have kids and the kids grow and whatever, it's really important to keep those tools in mind and then use those same kind of tools, you know, experience, communication, interpersonal relationships too,
mm-hmm,
to make sure that our replacements are getting a fair shake at in where they want to go. Like we talked about before this podcast, make sure they got the right vector.
Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah, right. Yeah. Make sure they're aligned properly. Yeah, they're staying on course. Yeah. Yeah. What I feel like I heard from you is you growing up, you've had all these like freedoms and things that you loved doing, and you learned a lot of experience along the way, and you want to make sure that those things that you were able to experience, other people are going to be able to experience, and in order to experience those, right, you might need to have the right tools in your kit, right?
Yeah, that is exactly what it's about. You want to have goals in mind, and then you have to figure out what tools you need, how to get them. And, you know, obviously we're not going to do it in a vacuum. We're going to depend on those that came before us. And so it's a wise young person who can seek out those that have those tools. And I think it's a wise older person who can figure out how to present those tools back.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, our replacements. And mm-hmm. I think that's it.
Yeah. Well, I feel like you also learn something new when you're teaching something back.
Absolutely.
You know, and especially when it might be for someone younger, right? Like if I was, when I was teaching like young tenderfoots, right, or how to do something new in scouting, right? I learned something along the way too. What are some things that you would say that you've learned while also wanting to teach and give back as well?
Well, for the longest time, you know, the joke around the Air Force was in the pilot world was if you can't do, teach.
That's right.
If you can't teach, evaluate. And that's not really true, but it was always a tongue-in-cheek. I found reference to the idea that, look, the rubber meets the road when you're actually actively teaching someone, when you are mentoring. And the behind-the-scenes actual thing that was occurring in flying, and then turns out in the rest of real life, is when you're teaching, you're always learning. You're absolutely always learning. And I find that true when I'm just substitute teaching. It's like, I learn something new every day. And it's not always just about the subject matter. It's really about like human beings, how they're interacting, what's important to help motivate people. How do I stay motivated? You know, there's always something going on that I learn about every day. And I think that's what keeps me going, actually, is like, that's why I love the job that I do right now. And I still love aviation. I love teaching in the aviation world because I'll learn something myself, you know, but not just because I'm going from one airframe to another, for one student level to another, but just because students come with new, you know, things about themselves that speak to how they can learn. And I'm like, oh, wait, okay, mental note. Maybe I should try and teach this another adjusted way next time because of how I see they are reacting. You know what I mean? And things fluctuate through generations too. So you gotta stay on your toes. But it's not a labor. It's a thankful, you know, kind of adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So otherwise we just feel like we're languishing and we're not.
Mm-hmm.
We're not growing. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely feel that where you feel you're keeping the lights on, you know.
Yeah,
you're constantly wanting to grow and constantly wanting to learn and exactly. And by teaching, you still are growing and you still are learning.
And just by the fact that if you set an example as a teacher, and I'll do the quote signs here, even though I can see them. As a teacher, you're also a student. At least that's how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And so when your actual students in a formal setting can see or feel that you as a teacher are still learning, I don't think that's a bad confession at all. I think that should be a point of inspiration, right? So, you know, that not only as a student are you taking on the whatever technical skills, physical skills, from your teacher, you're also, you're kind of learning that it's okay that as you start to get the torch passed and you're a teacher, it's okay for you to keep learning while you teach it too. And I think if you're a teacher that is just output, teaching, you know, you might not inspire future people to want to teach because, well, that's not very fun, right? That's not very challenging. It's not inspirational, right, to yourself. So yeah, I love it when and making mistakes is a huge, huge banner for that. It's an advertisement. No teacher is perfect, and if teachers want to pretend like they're perfect, I guess that's okay. But that's not very inspirational, right? So I would recommend, we're getting way off of aviation now.
No, yeah. Like I said, the podcast covers a lot.
But right? it does work back in the aviation world too. If you are teaching aircraft maintenance, if you are teaching pilot operations, if you are teaching dispatch, anything that I've been intimately involved with, aviation, far more important to get the people to come after you motivated to explore, understand that that learning never stops, that it's always super important to stay curious, super important to curiosity also is like check into things, right? Like double check. And then, again, we're back to maintenance, right?
Yeah.
Don't just let things pass you by, because you can let things pass you by. It could be,
or stay in front of the plane, right?
Right.
Be in the pilot world.
So, and that's where I think the aviation world overall is just one of the most dynamic of any possible envelopes of employment to be in. You know, whether it be maintaining, operating, supporting. It's just really, it keeps you on your toes, and it should. And if you don't like being on your toes, into something else, you know, because you depend on yourself, and everybody else around you depends on you too. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, like you were saying, it's a team.
Huge part.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you what's something that you wanted younger generations to really get and understand. And maybe you could repeat it, but I think you said a lot of those things earlier, like staying curious.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to read that right back to you. So stay curious. Don't, I would say, well, I'll try to stay positive.
Well, whatever you see, you know, I think it's important,
trust in the idea that, trust is something to be built. Don't just trust the first thing you hear or read or scroll through, right? Just don't. Trust is earned. Trust is, like I said, it's a growth process. And I'm referring probably obviously about, you know, our cyber society, our internet-based society. It's very tempting to take shortcuts and just go, well, I just read about this or heard this or saw this or whatever on my phone. That's true, and I'm gonna go adjust my life based on that.
Don't do that.
With the advent of not the advent, but with the flourishing of AI, it's getting easier and easier for non-human initiation to affect how we carry on our lives on a daily basis. That's kind of outrageous when you think about it. So just make sure that as a human being on this planet, you are always curious, always, and therefore always questioning, skeptical, whatever you want to call it. People sometimes saying skeptical is negative. I say it's simply helpful to make sure that you're going to do the next thing.
Another thing in maintenance is trust but verify.
Oh yeah, that's a huge. If I recall correctly, I was going to mention that earlier, but I didn't know about what your audience was all about. And I don't like to get political, but and I won't. I was at
least no, you could say whatever.
Trust but verify was a classic quote from President Ronald Reagan in the Cold War, and he was all about, you know, well, we want to trust the other side in the Cold War, the Soviet Union at that point. But we also need to verify, and that's why he was adamant about supporting launching an initiative to get this strategic arms limitation.
I didn't know that's where it came from, yeah. I just knew it from the aviation, you know, side of things.
But back to your point, it's like it's so important to not just take the first thing you read about or the most convenient thing you read about, see amount of you're about at face value. Just you kind of got to fight to understand what might be going on behind those alleged facts. You just have to. And everybody has to kind of become a detective, judge, jury member, whatever you want to call it. And yeah, it takes some energy, and therefore maybe if you don't have the energy, just don't then turn off all your inputs. Don't try to look at the news in quotes, because it's not probably going to be news. So either be ready for it as a kind of a bit of a job, as a bit of a fight, to discern what's the actual truth out of things, or don't participate in that.
Yeah.
I don't know, the latter doesn't sound like a good way to go through life, so you just kind of, everybody got to get up, better get their news filter fitness on, right? So I'm taking care of your body, you take care of your mind that way.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, in Boy Scouts, right? Physically strong, mentally.
Oh, yeah, right?
Yeah.
Probably sweet.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love how you bring up some of those, because I do find that over time, when I'm a little troubled about, wow, I don't feel like this is working for me as an adult trying to convey something else, especially in the teaching role as a substitute teacher. Like, I'm missing a mark. I'm not sure why. I'll go back to that scouting kind of those list of values. I'll pick out, you know, okay, oh, that's, oh yeah, maybe that's why it's not working. You know what I mean? And just kind of retool, try again the next day, figure out how to communicate better, how to get through to, you know, with somebody who is having some trouble, you know? Appreciate those kind of challenges. So. Anyway. Once again, off aviation topic, but I'm sure we can bring it full circle.
another topic is personal growth, right? That's
Well, if you're not of a healthy mindset and not emotionally healthy, then you really it's not good to be actively involved on that day in any kind of aviation activity, because it's very important to be able to be cleared, you know, perform everything to the standard, whether that be a specific checklist, made this procedure, you name it. That's just how it is. You just have to have your whole house in order, you know, from a very Zen kind of way, in order to do this, you know, beyond level stuff in aviation. It's just, yeah, the foundation's super important.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it is in anything, and definitely from what I've seen growing up, I'm extremely lucky to have been able to grow up and be able to have a background where it teaches you these values and scouting, right? And teaching you these mental toolkits and aviation that I've been able to, you know, adhere to and apply. And, you know, like you were saying, always be curious, always wanting to learn. And what you were saying is, you know, trust but verify, but also be open-minded to an idea, because it's okay to have someone talk, but you can't just close out their idea. Exactly what you were saying, you have to be able to do that own research, mm-hmm. to be able to see, okay, well, where does my point of view stand based on what this person said, and how much do I believe in this belief based on, you know, the more research that I've done, right? Because maybe their point of view is right, or maybe if you inherently believe it's not right, but you've been open-minded to listen to it and question your own, I think that's where the growth comes in. It will even solidify your pre-existing notion or idea that you have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Just We learn from our mistakes. We learn from the mistakes of others, and that's prime in aviation.
Yeah.
And we have to be full disclosure about all of that. There's no room for like cover up. There's no room for niceties sometimes, I guess. Mm-hmm. And that can be troublesome for some in the aviation world. On any angle of it, it's you don't want to cast a bad eye on somebody themselves personally, but you have to also bring to light that there was something that went wrong, and mm-hmm. sometimes there are definitely human beings that were part of the cause of why that went wrong, and it's more about the thing that went wrong, not about the person that caused that thing to go wrong, right? It's mm-hmm. absolutely, because again, there's always a positive that comes out of it, although some negative aspect might have occurred because of it. There's always a positive because we have learned, and that's super important to, you know, we'll get to the bottom of the procedural problem, the process problem. And yes, of course, people themselves need to be held accountable, but the more important thing to the aviation industry is that we learn from it and correct the process where it wasn't abundantly clear or wasn't easily enough funneled, or you name it, right? Aviation is not designed to be eat your young kind of thing, right? It's more about the let's all work together and learn for one another, and we're all human beings, we're all going to make mistakes. We all want to go to work each day minimizing our mistakes so that we don't cause or are not part of a chain of events comes in.
Or recognizing.
Being aware. Right, again, back to your stay curious thing, super important in all of life, but especially aviation. So.
Yeah. Well, I think that's been great. I think everything, I'm sure there's so much more to talk about, but I like how we're able to cover a lot about aviation, which I've really wanted to talk about for a long time. And I guess coming back and talking to you really brings back, you know, how I came to be on the path that, I guess I'm starting and I'm figuring out of what's going on as I continue on, right? But definitely the values and being able to just apply these different things that you learn from people. And again, like we're saying, staying open-minded, and all these different analogies that we gained from aviation have definitely stuck to me. And I try, in scouting too, I try really to stick to them. And I'm really thankful that you're also sharing these ideas that and values, not just to me, but also in subbing as well, or in your scouting career as well, and mentoring a lot of people. So I really want to thank you for that.
Appreciate that. I'm really glad to see that you represent the younger generation that is, taking the bull by the horns. You are doing whatever it takes, which includes like moving across our continent to try to experience all these different aspects of growth in aviation and just in life in general. And I think a lot of your foundation in scouting, because you brought it up several times, really helped to launch you on that journey. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to fail you, because you still have faith in those values and that early experience in your life. And that's perfect. And I would say, not just you, but anybody else who is on the younger side of things, still looking for what they're going to do next, just, this has gone a little long on this podcast, but if you can stay curious, if you can really remember that it's no matter what you do, it's important to do it well. That no matter what you are doing well, eventually it's going to lead to people being able to succeed or face peril. Aviation is the pinnacle of that to me. Take what you are learning seriously, take how you approach it and grow into seriously. Don't discount the importance of being on a team and learning from others and those that came before you. Those I think that's the recipe. I really do. And what's the ultimate goal? I don't know. To me, as I get older, it's to, like I said, train our replacements. Try to make sure that they have a notion that this might be important, and you know, certainly for themselves, but also for those who are coming after. And you know, full circle, aviation's not going away. How we do aviation might be changing in small part or large part over the years and decades coming up, but it's always going to be dependent on people being very highly skilled, people being skeptical, scrutinous, curious, people having the right kind of values, the right kind of drive, people who want to help others on a team. I mean, to me, that's it. And I love how you were able to kind of weave that, the scouting values you grew up with, to the aviation acumen that you're acquiring. And the sense of adventure is strong. You know, I hear it in all of your discussion. And that's, of course, refreshing. And that's where young adults should be, you know. So take that adventure and start to, like you're doing, start to shape it into something. And you know, keep a goal in mind. Fight for acquiring new skills and learning. You know, we never stop learning, right? So, like I say, I'm still a student. My Instagram profile is literally, I think the first two words on my IG is like, educator, period, student, period. That's literally what I have on it, right? And then maybe some are buried and it's like, pilot.
You know, you have to put it out there.
Those are the two far more important things to me. Far more important. Learning from others, teaching others, no matter what phase you're in growing your career. So it's been a real pleasure. It's becoming a night to annual. It's I really, really enjoy it coming by, and I'm looking forward to hearing how this goes for your future podcasts.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you so much for what you're doing and giving back, and definitely being a part of my formation too. So,
actually, best of luck to you and all of your followers.
Thank you. All right. This is From Ground to Great, Daniel Ruiz Menes with Mr. Kraft, signing out.